Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Take a glance at the Qatar-based Arabic news channel Al Jazeera's website this morning. It reveals a world where Al Gore's plans and Trent Lott's tight spot don't even register. A flashing banner warns, Iraq is in danger, developments of the Iraqi crisis. A web poll asks visitors to weigh in on Turkey's admission to the EU. And the lead story, three Palestinians dead in Gaza. At first glance, aljazeera.net could be any news site. But a closer inspection tells a different story. The dead in Gaza, for example, are called martyrs. And the image accompanying a link to more stories on the U.S. and Iraq imparts a message all its own. Images of Donald Rumsfeld and George Bush pair and feast flank one side of a map of Iraq, a crying Iraqi woman, an elderly Iraqi man, and Saddam Hussein flank the other. 35 million viewers worldwide, including more than 150,000 in this country, get their news from Al Jazeera. American critics charge that the news channel, best known for the Osama tapes, helped foment anti-American sentiment in the Arab world. But hold on. Egypt has charged that Al Jazeera delivers a sinister salad of sex, religion, and politics. Connection listeners, what do you think? Is Al Jazeera an indispensable service offering the other side of the CNN story, or does Al Jazeera inflame more than it informs? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined on the program today by Hafez Al-Mirazi. He is the Washington Bureau Chief of Al Jazeera. He joins us from a studio in Washington. John MacArthur is also with us. He's publisher of Harper's Magazine, also one of the most outspoken supporters for international press freedom, and he's joining us from New York. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hafez Al-Mirazi, let me start with you. Your plans for covering the likelihood, possibility of a war in Iraq, every organization's making plans. What are yours?
Well, for Al Jazeera plans, I think the we're planning to have our own presence in Iraq that would cover most of the major cities or cities that might witness any kind of hostilities or actions over there.
How many reporters would that be in Iraq?
We are planning for 4 to 6 reporters in Iraq by itself. Currently, we have 3, but in the case of any escalation of military escalation, that would jump to 6 at least.
And in Washington?
Here in Washington, we have already assigned a reporter to the Pentagon. She will be the first female military reporter in the Arab world and the Arab media. She is now currently in a one-week training with the Pentagon for reporters who are assigned to be military reporters. We have also a reporter assigned to the White House long time ago and the State Department. We're covering the United Nations, New York, of course. And we try to send the reporters back and forth to some cities according to the news, especially to cover concentrations of Arab and Muslim Americans in L.A., in Detroit, Michigan.
Now, I don't speak Arabic, and so I can't watch Al Jazeera and make sense of anything other than the pictures. But if I were to speak the language, would I be hearing reports from the Pentagon or New York or Iraq which would sound different from those I might see on CNN or ABC, CBS?
I think the perspective, of course, would be different. The example you gave, and maybe you could elaborate on that later, about the Al Jazeera website. The main story is the death of 3 Palestinians. While that is not there on CNN.com or other networks. So the perspective is different. Maybe the answers you get would be the same from American officials. Last week, I interviewed General Richard Myers, the chief of joint staff. And the answers, of course, would be the same answer that he would give to any American media. But sometimes what matters is the questions that they wouldn't be asked by the American media. For example, You wonder about the no-fly zone. It is taken for granted by U.S. reporters or Western reporters that a no-fly zone is a no-fly zone. That's been decided internationally. While we don't have any resolution or UN resolution to make it legal or legitimate for a no-fly zone. So when we ask why would you wonder if Iraq is trying to stop these kind of fighters or flights on their own territories, and while the U.S. consider that violation to UN security councils. So this is the variations, the kind of questions sometimes you ask as a reporter in the briefing room would be similar to a BBC reporter would be asking and would be different from an American reporter.
Okay,
I presume, Hafez, also that you don't routinely report that the UN weapons inspectors were kicked out of Iraq in December 1998. You report that differently. I'm giving you a chance to. No, you don't. You say that they were kicked out?
This is an example, a good example.
No, but I'm saying approvingly, I would assume Al Jazeera says that they left because Richard Butler took them out.
I did ask this question to General Myers himself. When they say they left, I said the U.S. wanted them to leave, asked them to leave. I asked the same question 3 weeks ago to Mr. Al-Baradei, the head of the International Agency for Atomic Agency that is supervising also inspectors over there. And when he said that our job has been interrupted from 1998 up to now, and I said it was been interrupted because the U.S. wanted them to get out in order to launch Desert Fox in December 1998, and he approved. He said partly yes. So, unfortunately, as you mentioned, Rick, that part of the story is not there, that why the inspectors were out. They were out because the U.S. administration at that time asked Mr. Butler, the head of UNSCOM, to pull them out in order for the military actions to begin.
This other voice that we're hearing is that of John, or Rick MacArthur is what you go by, right, Rick?
Right, Rick MacArthur.
Publisher of Harper's Magazine. Can I, before we get into the specifics, because I do want to actually talk about some, just in a broader sense, Rick, how, from your perspective, does Al Jazeera's presence in the market change the overall coverage that we're getting?
Well, it changes it for the American people in a good way. Whatever Al Jazeera's biases are, pro-Arab or pro, which is a terrible oversimplification because there are many different Arabs, many different Arab countries, different factions, different politics, and so on. But whatever their biases may be, the good thing about Al Jazeera is that it provides an alternative set of images, and if not information, but images from the front. And the front right now, the military front, the political front, is in the Middle East. And the American media are so hopelessly these days biased in favor of taking the feed from Washington, taking the feed from the State Department, repeating the official received wisdom of our government, that we need alternative sources, even if they're biased in the other direction. And if it does come to war in Iraq, it will be something like the situation we had in Kosovo and Serbia, where the only real images we had of combat or of the effects of the bombing, of the Allied bombing of Serbia, were from Serbian state television. Now, and that leads to another point, which is that I certainly hope that that Hafez and his colleagues have figured out a way to protect their reporters in Baghdad, because there is little doubt that the American Air Force is going to try to blow up Al Jazeera's bureau the way they did in Kabul in order to shut down their capability, their ability to transmit images of corpses and of civilian damage and so on and so forth to the American people.
Hafez, if the Americans are or, you know, officially or unofficially that opposed to the message that comes out on Al Jazeera, explain to me why it is that so many Arab governments are also highly critical of what it is that you put on the air.
think it's for the same reasons, unfortunately. Before 9/11, Dick, if you look back into some of the evaluation of Al Jazeera in many American media outlets, whether Los Angeles Times, Washington Post, New York Times, even 60 Minutes, CBS 60 Minutes, they ran a story about Al Jazeera in May 2001. And the title was The Tiny Station with a Big Mouth. Most of it favorable about the role of Al Jazeera in pushing democratization in the Arab and Muslim world, that the governments of these countries, authoritarian governments, do not like Al Jazeera bringing the dissidents and people who are not allowed to speak out and give them a podium and give them a chance to speak out and welcome in the same time government officials in the Arab countries to talk. And the result before 9/11 in the Arab world was the government-controlled the media and newspapers lashed at Al Jazeera or lashed out at Al Jazeera, and considering Al Jazeera anti-Egyptian if we are putting out something that the Egyptian government doesn't like, or anti-Saudi, and so on.
Well, let's just talk about the last few months. You've had your offices closed, if my notes are right, in Bahrain, in Saudi Arabia, in Jordan, and Kuwait, right?
Yeah, in the last few months, it was mainly in Jordan and Kuwait, because before that, we have been banned from Bahrain for years, maybe since the beginning of Al Jazeera, and Saudi Arabia also. They don't allow the presence of, or permanent presence of any outside media in general. But what I'm saying is that after 9/11, the same tactics that the government-controlled media in the Arab world used to rally people behind the flag and saying Al Jazeera is anti-Egyptian because the government doesn't like that, we have seen some American media, supposed to be independent, doing the same, that branding Al Jazeera, the whole media, as anti-American just because we are putting some views or some images, like the civilian casualties in Afghanistan or a Bin Laden tape, that the government of the U.S. does not like. And this is what happened. But if you go back to the logs, for example, of Al Jazeera after 9/11, you would find, and I always say that because I did serve before in the Voice of America radio station, I always say bring the logs of Voice of America that is government run and control and financed, and find out how many minutes and hours of George W. Bush broadcast live in news conferences and U.S. officials compared to Al Jazeera. You will find Al Jazeera carrying more U.S. officials briefing and interviews than other outlets, even comparing us to three major networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. In two occasions, the town hall meeting for President Bush in Atlanta, Georgia, with the postal workers and firefighters, that was at the end of last year, the three networks did not carry it. Al Jazeera carried it live with live Arabic interpretation, no spinning, nothing. And also recently, the Cincinnati speech by President Bush about Iraq, the three networks refused to carry the speech live. It was, although it was supposed to be in a prime time for the U.S. audience, Al Jazeera did carry that live.
All right, Connection listeners, you're getting a sense of what's being carried on Al Jazeera, the satellite Arabic television station that burst into such prominence, certainly in this country, after September 11th. We're asking you, in your view, whether or not taking a look at the possibility of war with Iraq is Al Jazeera an indispensable service in the field right now. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, or is it a network that just inflames more than it informs? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio News, and many of the programs you'll know that we have done in the past few weeks and months have been looking ahead to the possibility of a war with Iraq and how we are better to understand what is happening and what will happen. And this hour, a conversation about Al Jazeera, the upstart Arabic satellite television news station with millions of viewers around the world. And joining us from the our Washington studios, Hafez Al-Marazi. He's Washington bureau chief of Al Jazeera, hosts a weekly television show called From Washington. And John R. MacArthur, publisher of Harper's Magazine, goes by the name of Rick MacArthur, is also with us. He's author of a book called Second Front, Censorship and Propaganda in the Gulf War. Rick, let me begin with you, because if what we're talking about here is that there is inherent bias in America's coverage of this, and there is inherent bias in the Al Jazeera coverage of it from a more Arabic point of view, are we to see that as some kind of balancing out? Is the bias on one side and the bias on another ever going to bring us anything closer, anywhere closer to objectivity here?
Well, somewhat closer, but we have to, first of all, address the issue of who owns Al Jazeera. And I'm going to ask politely for Hafez to explain it again to me, because it is owned to some extent by the government of Qatar. And the whole question of what does government control imply? I mean, you face it yourself with NPR because it's partly government funded.
Right.
What does that do to the news report? And does it do anything? These days, a lot of us who are unhappy with the way the private American media are covering the crisis with Iraq are turning to the BBC for an alternative viewpoint, as Hafez implied. So the problem I have with government control is if there's no competition. I mean, if Qatar has a lot of daily newspapers competing with Al Jazeera, or there were a lot of really good Arab dailies across the Middle East that were not censored or that were objective, it wouldn't concern me that much. It wouldn't concern me much more than the BBC being controlled by the British government. On the American side, I am very, very concerned because I do believe in private control of the media. I think that's the only way you can have a genuinely free press. I am, in effect, the owner of Harper's Magazine. You know who I am. You know where to reach me if you want to write me a letter or complain. And you know what, you may know what my biases are if you read the magazine. The same cannot be said necessarily of a government-controlled operation. So in answer to your question, I don't know whether there is a balance being struck, but I am glad Al Jazeera is there because the American media is doing such a lousy job of covering the crisis and doing such a lousy job of covering wars. It has been since in the last 15 years.
Hafez, how beholden are you to Qatar?
Yes, the Al Jazeera is modeled actually after the BBC, and that since the Al Jazeera has been established in 1996, the idea is not, I wouldn't say, a government-controlled station, but a government-financed station to some extent. When they established or founded Al Jazeera, the idea was for 5 years Al Jazeera would get public grants from the government of Qatar with its own independent board of directors without any influence from the government. And in 5 years, Al Jazeera is supposed to rely on its own commercial revenues.
But you're in year six now, aren't you?
We're six now, and we couldn't achieve that for the simple reason: if we have a chance to compete freely, and advertisers wouldn't have the political pressure in their own countries to put the advertisement to where the majority of people watch. We have more than 35 million viewers in the Middle East and North Africa alone. But that didn't happen because, first of all, most of the target area that we broadcast to in the Arab world, the economy is public sector based, and that means the government is the main advertisers. And then when you have private sectors, they are so intimidated by their own governments that they wouldn't want to anger them if they put advertisement on Al Jazeera.
But if the emir of Qatar wanted to shut down Al Jazeera, could he do that tomorrow?
Yes, I think unfortunately he could do that because this is Qatar is just embarking in a democratic experience. It was the Emir of Qatar when he took over power in his own country, that wanted Al Jazeera to be a model and experience to start with. And this is what we're fighting for, and this is mainly why when they founded Al Jazeera, they said we would like Al Jazeera to be independent from any kind of political changes, and we wanted to rely on its own funding and its own commercial funding. But so far, with all many crises happened, many problems to the Qatari government, people, countries with bringing back their own ambassadors, boycotting them, cutting off relationship. But until now, the Emir of Qatar and the government of Qatar resisted all kind of pressure, including U.S. pressures on them to influence Al Jazeera.
Hafiz, let's move to a call if we can. We've got Nadia waiting on the line in Boston. Hi, Nadia.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Sure. Well, basically, I want to tell your Al Jazeera representative that his station is most definitely inflammatory and absolutely suspicious.
Do you watch it, Nadia?
Well, I did see it on a couple of occasions at the Ritz-Carlton in Boston, and I was very, very alarmed by the drama that they present. They capitalize on the literacy of the Arab world, the emotional makeup of it. They have a Steven Spielberg production of what should be a straightforward news. They couple the news with music, sensationalism, a choice. You do have to speak Arabic to really feel the intensity of the words they choose to present the opinion, which could be otherwise. Now, his argument is that this is a perspective and freedom of speech is nonsense. He himself explained the problem that that this part of the world has, which is the fact that we can't really have free speech because the target population is very heterogeneous. They don't have this complete and unfettered access to all aspects of information, like here, for example. So if any news station here chooses to be biased, it's immediately antagonized by the status quo because everybody has access to information otherwise, whereas in the Arab world it's not the case. So that's why the government...
So you're saying that it fits in the great menu of channels that exist in the United States, for example, but that it's problematic in the Arab world, Nadia?
And internet access and all kinds of access to all kinds of information. So reading the newspaper, for example.
Hafiz,
so basically,
How long has Nadia been living in the U.S. and how and what kind of media does she watch and satisfy with?
Because I'm very
Nadia. It's a fair question.
I'll defend Hafiz immediately Madam, I have to tell you that you do not have unfettered access to any information you want in the United States. You're sorely, sorely mistaken.
Well, you know what? People who travel abroad,
Did you feel that you saw the Gulf War? You invasion of Panama?
Can I tell you something?
Do you feel that you've seen the effects of the bombing in Afghanistan?
Give me a chance to answer.
Be brief if you would, Nadia.
Yes, people around here travel a lot, okay? And they go to other parts of the world, they hear about it, they read about it, they can talk about it. So yes, there's all kinds of ways of getting information. If you don't get it within the United States, you can get it in London, you can get it in Cairo, you can get it. All the Europeans are all over the Middle East now, they're in Egypt, and you know, they go and they see things for themselves. So
All right, Nadia, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute here and ask Rick to come in and finish the point that you were making, Rick.
Well, I'm just saying that you don't have unfettered access. She just acknowledged that she doesn't have unfettered access to information in the United States, that you have to more and more go abroad to find out what's going on in the United States or to find out what the actual effects, consequences of our foreign policy are. And in wartime particularly, and I guarantee you, you will get no images from the American media of death and destruction if there is a war with Iraq. If you get anything, it'll be CNN and the other networks buying pictures from Al Jazeera and the BBC, as long as the Al Jazeera Bureau doesn't get bombed.
Let me ask Hafiz on the other point that Nadia was raising, though, that take Al Jazeera out of the context of a multi-channel universe and talk about it as one source of news for the Arab-speaking world with that extra oomph and drama and sort of trumpets accompanying the news.
I think the problem that we need to respect also the audience and their and the sophistication of the audience. They don't have to study in Harvard or to stay in Boston or Cambridge in order to be sophisticated and get the message whether it is biased or not biased. I would say in the Arab world, in any village in the Arab world, in any average farmer even, they are so sophisticated when it comes to the news because they have learned from the controlled media and the oppression of their own regimes to pick and choose. So they would listen to three or four radio broadcasts on short waves or medium waves and make up out of the three or four versions their own news item in order to listen to the Amnesty annual report on human rights. And if you're living in one Arab country, you would listen maybe to three other Arab countries that competing against each other to know the truth about each one of them, only telling you the other part. So just to say, because of there is illiteracy over there, and those people are so naive, this is a condescending view of the Arab world or even of the rest of the world.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines if we can. Rania's hanging on in Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Rania.
Hello, Jake. Thank you so much for inviting two of my favorite news channels, Harper's and Al Jazeera. I grew up in the Arab world, and I've been living in the United States for 16 years, and I've done extensive media work on American media channels. And I have to say, I'm indebted to Al Jazeera for giving me news on what's happening in the occupied Palestinian territories, what was happening in the Afghanistan war, and especially on showing different perspectives of issues related to the Arab world and issues related to other parts of the world. So I'm extremely indebted to Al Jazeera for that. And I also find it extremely interesting the way Al Jazeera interviews people. As somebody who has been interviewed rather regularly on Fox National News, I mean, the way I'm interviewed on Fox is I'm given at the most 3 minutes with, you know, 5 to 6 seconds to respond to a very brutal question. Whereas on Al Jazeera, people from all perspectives actually are given the opportunity to finish a sentence.
Rania, what's the expertise that you're interviewed on? I'm sorry, I don't know your position here.
Yes, well, I do a lot of work relating to Iraq and Palestine. So I'm typically interviewed on Fox to present the sanctions on Iraq, the war in Iraq, and the occupation of Palestinian territories. And I understand, I mean, Fox is definitely an extremely biased news channel, and I'm astounded that Nadia can imagine that news channels in the United States are not biased. I have difficulty finding one that is objective.
Rania, maybe you can just weigh in for us on, on something that Hafiz was raising a little bit earlier in the program, and that was my reference at the very beginning to the website and how when you look at or hear, sorry, view stories on Al Jazeera about Palestinians who are killed in Gaza or suicide bombers that they're referred to as martyrs. When you look at that, do you see that as bias?
Well, it is coming from an Arab perspective. However, if I were to look at it objectively, I do believe that people who are killed by occupational forces or people who are killed in times of warfare are martyrs. I do believe that very much. If we were going to look at the French resistance under the German occupation, I believe that we would call the French who were killed by Nazi Germany martyrs. And so from that perspective, yes, I think objectively, Palestinians who are killed by Israeli military forces are martyrs.
So those who are also suicide bombers on a bus, they're martyrs as well.
Well, actually, I don't believe Al Jazeera refers to suicide bombers as martyrs, and I would appreciate if Hafiz and Merazi could correct me on this.
Okay, Hafiz, let's hear from you, because you did mention this earlier.
What we use that term, and especially from our reporters in the Palestinian occupied territories in the West Bank and Gaza, is that all people who are Palestinians who were killed during their resistance to occupation, they are called martyrs regardless. So I really don't have examples to say you to tell you that in some instance we said no, this guy was not or this guy was in, but we consider it all martyrs because this is a national resistance and liberation movement, not in a religious term or not for in any kind of glorifying in religious sense, because some of them are Christian Palestinians. And people are trying to use the word martyr as if we are encouraging them and we're telling them, oh, you're going to paradise or whatever. This is mainly used in a very secular term as a war of independence that would have been applied to Americans killed in the war of independence or French as Rania.
Okay, and Rick McCarthy, this is something.
I do object to using the word martyrs. And I think Al Jazeera would do itself a tremendous favor if they adopted the policy Reuters has adopted. Reuters will not refer to terrorists because, of course, as they correctly point out, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. So they've simply banned the use of the word terrorist or terrorism in any reference to any kind of attack or explosion that the United States government would routinely refer to as terrorism committed by terrorists. So I urge Hafez to drop the martyr line, just as Reuters has intelligently eschewed the terrorist cliché.
It's a point well taken.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Rania, thank you for your call. We're going to Marlborough, Massachusetts now, and Tahar is on the line. Hi, Tahar.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Thank you for having me. This is a question for Mr. Hafez. I'm wondering why isn't the Al Jazeera putting some English subtitles to your program, mainly the news, or maybe having an English channel for the American public?
Hafez.
Yeah, this is actually what we hope we could achieve. At the beginning, the idea was to provide subtitles for our shows, so English subtitles. And then we found out that maybe we are better off trying to work on establishing a whole English language version of Al Jazeera. And Al Jazeera started actually and took steps in studying that project. And maybe within, I would say, 1 year, we would witness and see some kind of an English language Al Jazeera. And in addition to the English website that is being developed, and maybe in the next 4 to 5 months, we will have an English website of Al Jazeera.
And Rick, I'm interested just in a brief comment from you before we go to a break. I mean, the comparison to CNN is kind of a funny one because CNN's two different things. It's CNN international abroad, but CNN domestic at home. And so there's that two different comparisons which don't quite fit.
Oh, well, of course, as anyone who's seen CNN overseas knows, it's like the difference between it's almost apples and oranges. CNN overseas is terrific. It's like Time and Newsweek overseas, but the American people, we're talking about condescension towards the towards the Arabs. What about condescension toward the American people? The dumbing down of the news on CNN, Time and Newsweek domestically is appalling. And if you see the way they do it overseas, yeah, it is like they're like different magazines and a different network entirely. Don't forget also that CNN is no longer owned by Ted Turner. When Ted Turner owned it, it was a much better network. Now it's owned by Time Warner, and they've dumbed it down.
I'm going to stop you there. We have to take a break. We'll be back to talk more about Al Jazeera, its place in preparations for war in Iraq, and its place in the balance of news and information that people are struggling to get their hands on these days. 1-800-423-8255 brings you into our conversation. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. And whether you like Al Jazeera or not, what it stands for or not, the work that it does or not, you're going to hear a lot more about it in the weeks and months ahead, particularly if there is a war in Iraq, as that organization also gets ready for coverage there. With me on this program to talk about the place of Al Jazeera in the range of media that's available, Rick MacArthur, who's publisher of Harper's Magazine, author of Second Front, Censorship and Propaganda in the Gulf War, and Hafez al-Mirazi, who is Washington Bureau Chief for Al Jazeera, host of a weekly television show called From Washington. Hafez, I want to begin with you because I'm interested in your perspective in the few years that Al Jazeera has been on the air. How has it changed media in general in the Arab world, if it is in fact the upstart, if it has gone up the nose of various presidents and emirs and other people who think that it goes too far in its criticism, has it moved the markers at all for the newspapers, the radio stations, the others?
I think it did, and in a very noticeable way. There is what we call always in the Arab world, we always use the word margin of freedom. There is a realization that we're not talking about freedom, but we're talking about a margin. So how much that margin is widened or narrowed, this is what you could tell. And what Al Jazeera did actually is that it gave sometimes to government-controlled media reporters or editors an excuse and an argument to their own boss and to their own censors that if we prevent and if we don't allow this kind of footage to be broadcast or this kind of material or news items to be published, Al Jazeera will put it out. And our audience in our own countries will find out that we are lying to them and we are hiding something. So it's better for us maybe to put it out. So this is where actually Al Jazeera did help a lot in. The second thing is that it gave people some kind of hope that they could do something. And if you give some Arab journalist the independence that they need and the securities for them to do an independent and professional job, they could do it and they don't have to rely on an Arabic version of BBC or Voice of America or CNN. And that was important also, in addition to the competition. Now, other countries who are trying to undermine Al Jazeera, they are launching their own satellite stations and trying to compete with Al Jazeera on the kind of openness that they could afford. Of course, they still have control in when it comes to their own countries, but yet the kind of competition that we are witnessing now because of Al Jazeera is helping a lot pushing democratization.
Well, Rick, it sounds like good news, but if the competition ends up being the Arabic version of Fox News, are we really going in the right direction?
Well, that's a profound question about competition and I guess to some extent capitalism, because remember also that Fox News broadcasts at the pleasure of the United States government, or rather we should say the American people. So they too are in a sense subsidized by the American government. I mean they are given a license to broadcast over the public airwaves. I am hopeful. I'm always in favor of more competition, even if it's government competition with quasi-governmental news organizations like Al Jazeera, because the more competition there is and the more ambition there is among reporters, the better chance you have of somebody accidentally telling the truth or deliberately telling the truth. The problem we have in this country now is a corporatization of the media, which diminishes and discourages competition. And overseas, in wartime, we now have this pool system which has outlawed competition between reporters. So the reporters who are, at least in the Gulf War, who were permitted to go anywhere near a battle scene, were required to share their information with the reporters back in Dhahran. I would be surprised if they form pools at all this time. But do you know, Hafez, if they're going to even bother with the pretense of pools? Because
I think
the whole idea is to control the information, for our government to control the information.
Yeah, and I think the information would be controlled one way or the other if the central command will be in Doha, Qatar, actually a few kilometers or a few miles from Al Jazeera headquarters. The polls will be there, and I don't think that any military operation would be run differently information-wise from the Gulf War of 1991.
What do you think will happen when Al Jazeera starts broadcasting or is able to broadcast images of dead civilians in Iraq? What do you think the military command, CENTCOM, and Qatar is going to object, and will the emir stand up for freedom of the press?
Well, I really don't know.
What do you think is going to happen?
I mean, it's very tough to judge, but there are so many ways for the military to stop some kind of broadcast, especially relying on satellite. But we hope that we would be able to deliver that message. We have done that in Afghanistan and explained to people that Al Jazeera was in Afghanistan, in Kabul, 2 years before 9/11. We were not the chosen media of Taliban or others. It just happened that we were there, and we broadcast before 9/11.
Oh, no, hang on a second here, Hafez. When all the other journalists were kicked out of Afghanistan, the Taliban said that Al Jazeera could stay. That's not exactly a gesture of of confidence in your objectivity, is it?
No, I mean, BBC were there, AP were there, and they had adjacent offices to ours. The only
I think the BBC was hoofed at the early part of the attack there, but I may be mistaken. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Dick, do you think CNN was chosen to stay in Baghdad in 1991 because they were biased in favor of Iraq? I mean, I don't think so. I think it was a business deal. It was a mutual
understanding. Sometimes also
understanding. But CNN stayed in Baghdad honorably, and I think did a good job.
That's true. And but at that time also, as you mentioned, it was the Ted Turner factor or influence who decided that the CNN would stay. At that time, the U.S. government wanted the media to pull out their own people out of there. It wasn't the Iraqi government who wanted people to get out.
Right, and they succeeded in intimidating enough the big American newspapers and networks to pull their people out, and CNN courageously stayed, although they were accused at the time of having cut a deal with Saddam that was favorable to Saddam.
It's a lot of sour grapes in 1991.
I think it was sour grapes, yeah. They were just jealousy. I think it was just jealousy.
Let's go to another call. Sturbridge, Massachusetts. Gail's joining us. Hi, Gail.
Hi, thank you for presenting two men with such a diverse opinion from what I have been getting a steady drumbeat over the usual media. I think it's wonderful. What I would like to ask Mr. Hafez is he under pressure to change his news to the equivalent of a Fox-type view, given that he is supported by a government and all the Arab governments under enormous pressure from Washington to come out supporting a war against Iraq? I imagine overwhelming pressure. I would think that the Qatar government would be under that sort of pressure and that it would be reflected in how they treat your news.
Yeah, thank you for your question. Actually, the pressure, of course, we cannot deny it, but what matters for us is that we also have pressure, and that much stronger even from our own audience, that they expect Al Jazeera to represent their views, and their views, of course, against any kind of military action that would result in killing their own fellow citizens or other Iraqis or innocent people. And the Al Jazeera is taking its own independent editorial policy regardless of the policies of the government of Qatar. For example, the government of Qatar conducting war games over there, inviting CENTCOM to be there at least for a while. In my weekly show from Washington last Friday, the show was about the U.S.-Qatari relationship. And we have people very critical to the government of Qatar, as well as people who are defending the government of Qatar in their relationship and the kind of military facilities they are given for the U.S. for any potential war against Iraq. We played both together in the same program, and we didn't have any problem with the government of Qatar because of broadcasting a show like that. And we hope that would continue in the future.
What about pressure from Washington on the work that you're doing in Washington?
Well, pressure from Washington, sometimes we don't feel it directly. Sometimes it is subtle. It has been reported that the administration complained many times and protested to the government of Qatar regarding Al Jazeera. Our office in Kabul in Afghanistan has been bombed by three guided missiles exactly 3 or 4 hours before the Northern Alliance would get into Afghanistan, and when people were worried that Al Jazeera might carry publicize the images of people killed in Afghanistan or in Kabul, the Pentagon apologized and said that we did not mean it. We have never hit any media facility.
Of course they didn't mean it, yeah.
Yeah, and
the interesting
and
thing,
so,
though,
someone.
Rick, is that, you know, if a network like Al Jazeera wants some time with Donald Rumsfeld or Colin Powell, they're
right.
actually more likely to get it than many American networks.
Absolutely. Hafez has told me last year that they're lining up to he could pick and choose between government officials who would refuse to be interviewed on short notice for American television, for an American newspaper. So they're playing it both ways. You know, they want to be able to use Al Jazeera for propaganda purposes where they can, and they want to censor Al Jazeera when Al Jazeera does things that make the American government look bad. So it's an interesting question. What will happen if things get ugly in Baghdad and there's too much ugliness on Al Jazeera rebroadcast on American television? What's the American military, what's Karl Rove at the White House going to do? What are they going to do?
And actually, the access that we had for a while after the war in Afghanistan in October, that has stopped for a while, and some people maybe in the administration or somewhere else tried to use that as a leverage or as a carrot in order to reward us if we are good boys or to prevent us from kind of interviews if we are not. And we explained to them that we are doing our own our work, and we try hard to cover the U.S. point of view. If you would like to help us in covering that point of view by providing interviews, you're welcome. If not, we're not going to go out of our ways or to ask you nice questions in order to appease you. And it's like an on and off relationship in regarding
interviews. How did you cover, may I ask, it's Rick MacArthur again, how did you cover the recent revelations about Prince Bandar's wife making donations to the indirectly or directly to the 9/11 hijacker family?
We covered the story just like the rest of the American media, but with less emphasis on the background of the of Princess Haifa, because there is in general in the Arab media some kind of sensitivities about private life, about wives of politicians. But we did cover it, and the irony is that the spokesman of the Saudi embassy in Washington, who gave interviews for Fox, for everybody in Washington, refused to give an interview for Al Jazeera if we are a hostile media.
I get the impression, Rick, you're saying that Al Jazeera could use its muscle to be a more investigative network in and on stories like that one?
Yes, I would hope that Al Jazeera, with its increased funding and larger staff, would start doing some investigative reporting in Washington on behalf of the Arab peoples about the corruption of the Saudi Arabian embassy in Washington. Because, you know, my favorite media hypocrisy, and believe me, I'm very sensitive to the problems of the Palestinians, but when people start complaining about the Israel lobby and the influence of Israel on the American media and so on, I always want to throw up my hands and shout, what about the Saudi lobby? The Saudi Arabians have been throwing around millions and millions of dollars for 15, 20 years, no, much longer, actually. And Prince Bandar is the toast of Washington.
We're just about out of time here, but Hafez, it sounds like a challenge
like
for you.
I'd like to see Al Jazeera go after the Saudis, yeah.
We're not after anybody, Israelis or Saudis or anyone. We are after the story, and if we have a story that is credible, we will put it out for our people with our motto, the opinion and the other opinion.
Hafez, we'll talk again. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Hafez al-Mirazi is Washington Bureau Chief for Al Jazeera. Rick MacArthur, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Rick is publisher of Harper's Magazine. Connection listeners, please feel free to continue the conversation at our website on our forum pages, where we are at theconnection.org. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Arit Karitsky-Fox, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. To purchase cassettes and CDs of The Connection, please visit www.theconnection.org or phone 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. We're